This is the Medicast, January 5th, 2009.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up! Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to the Medicast. This is episode 150, and I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Podmedic. And I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome everybody to the first episode here of 2009. We have a lot of great things planned for the new year, a lot of exciting new ideas, new tips, new programs scheduled for you here, and it's all part of what's coming up here in the fourth year of the Medicast, which will have our fourth anniversary here the first week in February. If you would like to check out the website, if you're a brand new listener of the show and checking out the Medicast for the very first time, make sure you head over and check out the Medicast website. Go to medicast.com. You'll find links to all of the podcasts that we produce there, especially this one. You'll also be able to go to the Medicast blog. And once there in the podcast category, you'll find all of the links for this show notes for this episode, as well as for all of the other Medicast episodes available for you there at the Medicast website. While you're at it, make sure you sign up for the Medicast newsletter and get those show notes delivered to you absolutely free by email every single week. For all of you long-term listeners, contributors to the show, both here and over at the Medicast forums, I want to welcome you back for a brand new year. We're going to have some exciting things coming up, as I said, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. First, I want to remind everybody, this is brand new. We are now a member of the ProMed Network. That's a network that I've put together along with a few other medical podcasters, providing you a resource for great medical podcasts produced by medical professionals. Check it out. Go to ProMed Network. We'll jump on into the listener email right now, and we have quite a bit, so I'm going to get moving right on along into it. First off, we have some email in from a longtime listener, David. David sent me a link to an article that was published at the end of the year at NPR, and it is looking at the recent review panel on medevac accidents in 2008. There were quite a few medevac accidents, quite a few line of duty deaths associated with those accidents, and there have been some calls for oversight and review of those transport units. And this is a great review of those calls for oversight and looking at the key issues surrounding this problem. And I've put a link in the show notes just before the news so you can follow up on that article yourself. And David, thanks for sending that to me. I also got an email in from listener Yash. Yash is a first responder with a university team in Toronto and is working on getting new recruits for his university's volunteer service, and I think that's a great idea. He wanted to check on an experience he had when he was responding to a call where they had a three-year-old girl, supine with shortness of breath, apparently listening to lung sounds. There was sounds of, he's calling it edema, possibly sounds of some fluid in the lungs. Paramedics arrived and began to open the airway. And when they went to do suction with their portable suction unit, the suction unit was out of batteries. Now, apparently the patient had suffered a brain hemorrhage and was apparently pronounced dead as soon as they arrived at the hospital or soon after. But this is a tragedy, obviously something that's upsetting to see. And Yash was asking the question, you know, why wasn't the equipment in good working order? You know, I can't answer that question necessarily on this specific call, but it does, as I always find out when I hear things like this, serve as a strong reminder for all of us to double check our equipment each and every shift. Don't assume or cut corners and think the guy on the last shift did it for you or swapped out the batteries or did anything. You need to check your bags, check your equipment, check your batteries before you come on shift, before you go on duty, and while you're on every call. And that will save you from having something like this occur. Again, you know, it doesn't sound like, based on how the child was pronounced once the arrival at the hospital occurred, that that may have made a whole lot of difference. We will never know, obviously. But clearly the lesson for the rest of us is to check our equipment often, early, and be ready to go when those calls hit. I also got an email in from a listener, Josh. Josh is the husband of our listener, Kelly, who listens to the show and has been around for a long time. And I guess Josh listens to the show as well. But Josh was checking in. He used to be a paramedic and let his certification lapse while he was going back to school and completing his master's degree. And he's now back in the community again, has some free time and wants to help out and wanted to know a little bit more about what he needs to do to get his certification reinstated. And, you know, there's no easy answer to that. The National Registry, you can check in with them at their website to see what they would require. Depending on how long it's been, you may be able to just get your backup con ed and recertification classes done, and then you can go ahead and take the test. You also will need to contact your local jurisdiction. That might either be a state or a local, like, county or city jurisdiction to find out what they will require. But unfortunately, there's not an easy answer to that question. But the good news is you're going to do it, and I think that's good news. I would encourage you to let us know what you did need to do to get that squared away in your area so that some other folks can have an idea of what would need to be done. I know in the state of Maryland, if your certification has not lapsed for more than 3 years, I believe you can go back to the state and petition for an extension, in which case you still have to go do all of your recertification training, all of your continuing education for National Registry, and then go through National Registry to retake everything there. You may have to retake your written test and perform your skills test again. So that's just something to check into. But you're going to need to check in both locations if you want to reestablish your National Registry status, and also then check with your local jurisdiction about what they will require as well. So, Josh, thanks for getting in touch with the show and listening. And you and Kelly, thanks for being great supporters of the show. I also got a couple of voicemails, so let's get right on into them. First off, listener Jonathan checking in.
Hey, Jamie, this is Jonathan. I'm calling from Brimfield, Massachusetts. I just want to let you know I enjoy listening to your podcast, and I think it's one of the better podcasts out there for EMS providers. I thought an idea for a show maybe might be actually working myself, not being in EMS on the streets anymore. I've been a medic for about 15 years now. I find my role is in doing EMS and safety, risk management kind of thing, working for a large theme park. And I know a lot of people are looking to transition their careers from off the streets into other areas that are not specifically working on ambulance, but still working as a paramedic or EMT. So I thought that might be a good idea for a show, is maybe like non-traditional roles for EMS providers, and get some people on the show to see how we can transition into these and keep your skills up and keep working. But just people who don't want to work on a rig for the rest of their lives kind of might have an opportunity to do something different. So other than that, enjoyed your show, and keep up the good work with the podcast.
And he goes on to leave his email address, as we ask you to do. So I want to thank Jonathan for his comments, and that's a great idea. Maybe we can find some time. The Medicast Live schedule is kind of booked up for the rest of the, I guess, through mid-spring or so. But maybe we can try to set a call up and talk to some of the folks that are doing things outside of traditional EMS and maybe working in education in EMS or working as a supervisory role in an office setting in EMS. But definitely we want to talk about some of the alternatives you have after you've been on the street or instead of even being on the street. So definitely a great idea, Jonathan, and thanks for checking in and for your kind words. Finally, one more voicemail. Got one in from listener Mark with some comments on the Medicast and some of the ways it's helped him out.
Hi, Jamie. This is Mark from Los Angeles again. I'll try this again. I got dropped. Gotta love that AT&T 3G on the iPhone. Woohoo! Can't wait for Verizon to take it over. But the reason why I'm calling is I just wanted to thank you for getting back to me in regards to the questions that I had about podcasting, as well as over the last year or two, all the other questions in regards to EMS, You've gotten back to me. And I personally wanted to, put a thanks to you out there so that the other listeners know, what a great guy you are. I mean, you've always gotten back to me, whether it was an email. You're doing a super job out there, both as far as educating, with the EMS. And then now with me, you've helped me out quite a bit as far as trying to set up my own podcast. So keep up the great work, and I look forward to your next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.
Mark, thank you for your kind words, and it's a pleasure to help new podcasters get started. If anyone else out there listening is interested in starting a podcast on a topic, I'd be more than happy to help point you in the right direction, give you some pointers, even spend some time helping you get your stuff together and get set up. That's what we're all here for. It's one of the nice things about what we do. We really have a brotherhood and a sisterhood, don't want to leave anybody out, that we are able to really participate together in what we do and share our knowledge and share our expertise. And that goes beyond just the EMS setting. So Mark, it's great to hopefully have you here on board as a podcaster here in the EMS setting soon. And in the meantime, thanks for listening to the show and thanks for your comment. If you'd like to leave a voicemail comment and share your comments live with the listeners like this, you can do so. Call into the voicemail line, and that is 941-306-3342. That's area code 941-306-3342. That's 94130-MEDIC. Call in if you have a comment, a question, a suggestion, and even corrections on the show. We definitely want to make sure the best information possible for EMS providers is what we're getting out to you, the listeners, here on the show. And if you have any comments or things you'd like to share, we definitely want to hear them. Time to jump on into this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with a story that I bet a lot of you have already caught or heard wind of, but if you haven't, I think it's something that bears discussion, definitely. I got a lot of emails with this link in it, and I have to say thank you very much. Don't hesitate to send me links to news items when they crop up, even if you think I got it from 10 other people, because you may be wrong, and I got this from a couple of different listeners, including Josh's wife, Kelly. You heard Josh's question and comments earlier in the email section. And also, I got this from our friend Jerry down in Australia. And it has to do with two British EMTs who allegedly were overheard discussing whether or not they should be treating a 59-year-old man who needed needed resuscitation in his home. They said they arrived at this gentleman's home in response to an emergency call back in November. But after they entered the building, they decided that the person's home was such bad shape that they didn't think he was worth saving. And that was the comment that was overheard. They then had a discussion and was overheard by dispatchers. And that was because the gentleman who called had not hung up the telephone after calling for help. Obviously, they didn't realize the phone was connected, and of course, it was recorded. These two gentlemen are suspended, and they are likely to appear in court facing actual criminal charges. Guys, I'm not sure what happened here. It's one of those situations where you have to think that somebody made an offhand comment in a situation where someone didn't live after they did initiate resuscitation. But because of the offhand comment, it calls into question whether you took your full efforts. And this is something we have to remember because we are out in the public eye. You know, it should be something you keep in mind anywhere you are working in a healthcare setting, but definitely for us in EMS, because we work in the public eye. We are on motor vehicle accident scenes with patients who have died and succumbed to their injuries, and we stand around and we crack our jokes because that's how we handle the stress that we have to deal with when we're faced with dead bodies and horrible injuries. But what if a family member of that deceased person shows up and you're sitting there telling a story that you probably shouldn't have told, or you're laughing or cracking a joke right, a few feet away from a dead person. Everyone else doesn't understand that, and it makes us look callous, it makes us look unprofessional, and just an offhand comment can get not only look unprofessional, but actually cause you to have your skills, your ability to provide care, and even, you know, the decision made to arrest you on criminal charges because of the perception that you didn't do your job. So let's keep that in mind and remember the situation with these two EMTs and remember that there are always ears around. It's something, you know, interesting. My background in radio and television and film production as a sound engineer back before I became a paramedic. But I have to say, you know, we always had a saying that you assume the mic is always live. And that should be true for us with our radios, as well as remembering that the phone is often off the hook with our dispatch centers online and recording the goings on in the house. Next up is a news item about a way that Cincinnati in Ohio is looking at reducing call volume for EMS calls and trying to keep patients at home that may not need to go to the hospital. And before we do that, I'm going to play a little something that we got from our friend Irk from Australia. One of the campaigns they're undertaking in New South Wales to reduce ambulance overuse in that area.
Here's a quick test. Listen to these two sounds. Which one is a taxi? Or
just drop us over there, thanks.
The first sound was an ambulance. The second was a taxi. Some people can't tell the difference. The following is based on a real 000 call.
Hello, ambulance. What's the exact address of the emergency?
Yeah, I've had a toothache for 6 days and I need an ambulance.
This caller needs a taxi, not an ambulance. Using an ambulance as a taxi means paramedics may be delayed in attending a life-threatening emergency. You can help save lives. Only call 000 for an ambulance if it's an emergency. Please, don't use an ambulance as a taxi.
All right, I'll give you a few minutes to stop laughing. I'm sure that's going to get played around quite a few places, and I want to thank our friends down under, IRC from Sydney, and the whole gang there at the IRC Pod podcast for sending that up. This has to do with an article I found about the Cincinnati 911 service dispatchers getting ready to bring in nurses to handle over-the-call medicine. Basically, telenursing is an aspect of nursing care where you can call a nurse and ask a question. A lot of us have seen the Ask a Nurse services offered by local hospitals. National hospital centers offer similar programs where you can call and ask questions. And 911 centers, what a great idea. Bring a couple of nurses in there, have them on staff during call time and high call volumes, and help to weed through some of these calls. Certain calls can be handled by a medical professional over the phone in the right setting with the right resources, and you can help people understand what they need to do. This is exactly what the nurses who work at poison control centers do. They listen to the patient's complaint, they review the patient's history of the current event, and then they make a determination whether or not that patient needs to have immediate emergency treatment for an overdose or a poisoning, or whether it's something they can treat safely at home that they were concerned about, but it really didn't need emergency treatment. And this is something that I think will, if it catches on and it has success, can really go a long way towards staving off some of the issues we're having with overuse of ambulance services by patients who may think they're in an emergency situation but may not need emergency transport. In the meantime, I would urge you to check with your local jurisdiction. Maybe they need to have a similar public service announcement campaign as what they have in New South Wales. There's another version of that. Maybe I'll play that in a future episode. But again, thanks to the IRC Pod podcast, IRCpod.com. You can listen to IRC's podcast from down under. It's a lot of fun. I want to thank them again for doing that. While I'm thanking our friends in Australia, we'll pick up an Australian news story. This is from the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, abc.net.au. And this is a story about a student paramedic delivering a baby. And, you know, this is one of those things that you never know once you start training when you're going to need to use some aspect of that training. And in fact, a woman who was 3 days overdue and in active labor called for an ambulance, and the first person through the door was a student paramedic. A paramedic had not yet covered the childbirth section of training, but went ahead and assisted with the birth en route to the hospital on the ambulance. And just something to point out that, you know, it's great to see students out in the field and getting clinical experience. And remember that you just never know. So it's nothing wrong with reading ahead in your book. You might need some additional information. But it's, you know, just something I wanted to point out. I always like to find out stories about this when students do a good job and get mentioned in the news. It helps all of us look better, and it helps us all recruit new members into the profession. Finally, it must be something in the air because I have another story on a newborn in an unusual situation. A Northwest Airlines flight left the Netherlands bound for Boston, and somewhere over the Atlantic, their population of passengers increased by one. That's right, there was a baby born during a transatlantic flight, and the baby was born on the way to Boston. The child was there was a doctor and a paramedic who were on the flight and assisted in the birth. The plane landed without incident, and the mother and the baby were immediately taken to the hospital. But it is very interesting to hear about some of the unusual situations that can be presented. And of course, we know a lot about these, but you know, even when you're traveling on vacation, you need to be prepared to be ready for just about anything. And so this is just a great news story, looking at some of the different ways we can provide care and assist with care in situations outside of what we might consider normal, as if anything we do is normal, but just a great story. So all of these stories we talked about in the news are available in the show notes, so I urge you to head over and check those stories out for yourself and share them and share this episode with your friends and colleagues. As you probably figured, our tip of the week this week is going to look at newborns. And we're not going to look at childbirth itself. That's a whole other topic and a tip of the week in and of itself. We're going to look at newborn resuscitation. And so this is something that I think we need to focus on and revisit from time to time. Having childbirth going on in the back of our ambulance, having to use neonatal resuscitation skills is not something we do very often in the field. And so it's one of those things you really need to pull out your protocols and review from time to time. And I don't just mean once a year. I mean, that's something that I pull out and I review probably every couple of months. I go through the whole protocol book probably once a month, once every month and a half to 2 months. I just pull it out and I read a section of it, and I mark my spot and I read another section of it. And it's one of those things I can pull out and check out, you know, read a couple of sections of the protocols at a time in a 10 or 15 minute sitting every day and review your protocols and know your protocols, especially those things that you don't use very often. One of the things I want to stress to you about the neonatal resuscitation protocols in whatever your setting is that the vast majority of the resuscitative efforts needed by newborns are BLS resuscitation skills. As is true for adults and older children, good BLS resuscitation skills, good BLS protocol use and knowledge are key to having successful resuscitation. In newborns, the good news for you is that these are newborns. They want to live. I mean, they're built to come out and start living, start becoming, you know, breathing viable members of the outdoor community, if you will. And so it's in your favor to just do a few simple things and probably have to do nothing else. In fact, looking at some of the statistics I've seen, about 10% of all newborns require some resuscitation, and that could be something as simple as some stimulation to begin breathing, as up to and including about 1% of all newborns requiring advanced life support interventions. So this is something to keep in mind. 99 out of 100 babies born in the back of your ambulance are likely to need BLS care only to begin thriving, at least initially. And so this is something that you can keep in mind, that you need to really think about BLS before ALS if you're an ALS provider. And if you're a BLS provider, you know, have faith and comfort in knowledge in the fact that your skills are really exactly what is needed in these situations. And so good, solid knowledge of your BLS skills will take you a long way, even as an ALS provider in the future, if you should move on in that direction. First off, most of you have probably seen the algorithm that's put together for newborns. It's basically an inverted pyramid or an upside down triangle. And that's because we start at the top and funnel down to the bottom to come to the point where we just have, you know, the ALS, the ALS PALS interventions, where we have full cardiac arrest, full advanced life support measures being taken. But again, because of the shape of that upside down pyramid, that inverted triangle, we have that at that point down there where it happens very few times in total. At the top of the pyramid, in the widest part, we have drying, warming, positioning the child, stimulating, and suctioning. Dry, warm, position, stimulate, and suction. Just that's one of those things you can just memorize and keep it in the back of your head so that when you think about a newborn, you immediately think dry, warm, position, stimulate, and suction. Okay? You're going to dry the baby off, warm the baby. You're going to position the baby head down. Not upside down head down, but like on an incline head down to facilitate keeping secretions out of the airway. You're going to want to stimulate. Often just the stimulation of drying them off and wrapping them up warmly is going to be enough stimulation, but you may need to flick the soles of the feet with your fingers. Suctioning is necessary, and that's stimulation in and of itself. Remember to suction the mouth, then the nose. And this is because you want to clear all of the fluids and things out of the mouth before the baby takes that first breath through the nose. And so you want to go ahead and clear out the airway. And you can begin this suctioning as the head emerges from the birth canal before the rest of the body has emerged. And this is a good way to do that before they can take a breath because, of course, their chest cavity is being squeezed at that point and they can't take a breath. But then you go ahead and suction them and then they're delivered and you have this baby there and you're drying, you're warming, you're positioning, you're stimulating. You may, again, go back and suction again, mouth, then nose. And then you're going to begin your assessment algorithm. You're going to be looking for some key things. So what are we looking at? First off, you can look very quickly at the child's respiratory rate. Is it too fast or too slow? The average respiratory rate for a newborn is about 40. So if they're below 30, if they're gasping for breath, if they're apneic at all, you immediately want to go ahead and begin bagging the baby. So this is a sign that you need to give about 20 to 30 breaths over about 30 seconds of 100% oxygen. Use an appropriate sized bag valve mask for a neonate. You want to make sure the mask is appropriately sized to the tiny little face. And remember, just enough ventilations to see chest rise. If you start to see the chest rise, that's all you need to do. It does not take much. We're talking little tiny puffs. These are little tiny lungs. If the baby seems to be breathing all right but appears to be a little cyanotic, either some central cyanosis, which basically is blue, still blue in the central part of the body, the torso and the head, that is a sign that they're still not oxygenating very well. So you can provide blow-by oxygen for this child if the respiratory rate seems good, if they're crying. It's not unusual to see peripheral cyanosis in a newborn, even up to 5 minutes or more later. This is because their little circulations are still building out. You know, their heart's been pumping, but it has not been used to pumping completely fully oxygenated blood. And so some systems have been shunted for some time. So you will see some peripheral cyanosis in the lips, perhaps in the hands and arms and legs. This is somewhat normal if you've seen pinking of the face, head, and torso, that it's a sign of good central circulation. Again, blow by oxygen will not hurt. Avoid blowing oxygen directly into the eyes. So you try to angle that oxygen downward past the face rather than upward past the face, just because there has been some risk of possible blindness or other vision problems later in life following oxygen directly to the corneas. If you have problems and you've been ventilating the child, if the heart rate is less than 100 or you see central cyanosis, again, you want to ventilate with a bag valve mask 40 to 60 breaths per minute and continue to reassess. If the heart rate is less than 60 after that initial 30 seconds of bagging the baby and you've got a, you're checking your pulse, either using a stethoscope or you're checking a brachial pulse, you're going to want to go ahead and begin chest compressions, 120 compressions per minute, and you want to do that so that you can adequately bag and perform compressions. Remember, this is most likely a ventilatory issue and a respiratory issue. If we can get the respiratory system up and running, if we can oxygenate this baby, the heart rate should come up on its own. The baby's bradycardic probably because of periods of apnea or too long without oxygen in the system. They're hypoxic. And so getting oxygen back in the system, perhaps assisting with chest compressions, will bring their heart rate back and you will see them start to pink up. Obviously, you want to be prepared for ALS interventions. That's always something to keep in the back of your mind. But if you look at the things I've discussed up to this point, none of them are ALS interventions. They are basic newborn interventions. Dry, warm position, stimulate, suction. Those are all BLS interventions. If they're cyanotic, blow by oxygen. Again, BLS interventions. If they are apneic and gasping and they have a heart rate of less than 100 or they have signs of central cyanosis, we need to ventilate them initially for 30 seconds at a rate of 40 to 60 breaths per minute, which would be about 20 to 30 breaths in that first 30 seconds. If after 30 seconds of bagging them in 100% oxygen and we still have a heart rate less than 60, then the American Heart Association protocol says to go ahead and begin chest compressions at the rate of 120 compressions per minute. So these are important, along with our bag valve mask, BLS skills. Only after we've tried all of these things, if we are still seeing no return of spontaneous circulation, if we still have central cyanosis and a heart rate of less than 60 after doing all of these skills, then it may be necessary to move into the ALS realm start establishing some medication interventions and checking for cardiac problems or other issues. So this is just something I really can't stress enough. Start with the easy and move to the more difficult. Obviously, there's some things to look for when the child is born. Signs of meconium, which is actually a greenish-brown tint or fluid that is mixed in with the amniotic fluid. This is signs signs of fetal distress in the womb. And what has happened is the baby has had a bowel movement inside the uterus and has mixed that fecal matter in with the amniotic fluid. And when this happens, you have a big problem because you have a risk of aspirating that fecal matter and material, and it will just tear up the lungs, causing pneumonia and ultimately death if it is not treated and taken care of rapidly. So if you recognize that there's been signs of meconium aspiration, that is where you need to jump right on in to an ALS skill, and that is deep tracheal suctioning using an ET tube and a meconium aspirator. Those of you who are Medicast Extra members and subscribers, you will actually get some additional resources and links that I found on deep suctioning technique, pathophysiology of meconium aspiration, and those things will be presented over in the Medicast Extra with this tip when it gets posted later this week. For the rest of you, you can search for that information, talk to your instructors, your supervisors, and your training officers for more information on that. So that's a look at newborn neonatal resuscitation, and I hope that it's something that you never have to use beyond the basics of, and we're going to do it again because I want you to memorize this, dry, warm position, stimulate, and suction. Remember to suction the mouth first and then the nose, and then look for signs of cyanosis, assess respiratory condition and airway, just like we do for every other patient, and treat with oxygen and additional resuscitative measures as necessary. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the Medicast, the first Medicast episode of 2009. It's been a fun ride here over these past 3 years as we wrap up year three of the Medicast, and I'm looking forward to a lot more exciting fun coming up this coming year for the Medicast community. I want to remind you to check out all of the information and links provided in the show notes. I can provide general medical information here for you, but I can't provide any kind of diagnosis for you or your patients, obviously. So you need to use the skills within your scope of practice, in your community and jurisdiction. Follow up with your training officers, with your instructors and your supervisors, as well as your own protocols on what is appropriate for you. Don't forget, you can get back in touch with me here. Shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com, podmedic@mac.com, and send me your comments, questions, suggestions about today's show. I love hearing back from you. You can also shoot me any news articles about EMS or medical issues in your community, and perhaps I'll be able to share them here with the listeners here on the show. You can also always call in, as our listeners did this week, to the voicemail line, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. Time to wrap up with some great PodSafe music, as we always do. And this week, I'm going to end up with an artist that we play quite a bit here on the Medicast shows, both here and at the nursing show, and that is Matthew Ebel. He's got some great music, and I'm going to play one of my favorites of his, a song called Downtown. If you like what you hear, head over and follow the link in the show notes to Matthew's site. Let him know you heard his song here on the Medicast. You can also check out his music. There'll be a link in the show notes where if you have iTunes, you can actually go and purchase this song directly at iTunes for just 99 cents. So if you like the song, support the artists that support podcasting and purchase their music. This is Matthew Ebel's song, Downtown. In the meantime, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and until next week, I want to remind all of you to remember Scene Safety and BSI. Thank you.
baby, you better sell, or your daddy gonna raise hell. He gives you money, but honey, your daddy don't give a damn unless you got a Johnny and you.